Live from Pullman National Monument in Chicago, Illinois, with your host, Dr. Lynn Hughes.
We welcome you to Live from the Pullman National Monument, our global cast magazine format talk radio show, where we discuss all things culturally economic development, i.e. tourism, and we hold informative conversations on the arts, music, business, and people. I'm your host, Dr. Lynn Hughes, founder of the National A. Philip Randolph Pullman Porter Museum, a National Park Service site in Chicago, Illinois. Good day to you, my listening audience, and we thank you for joining us. Stay with us. Today's show is brought to you by Hughes Peterson Publishing, the Pullman Messenger Magazine, and partially underwritten by Choose Chicago, the premier tourism marketing agency in Chicago, Illinois. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Live from the Pullman National Monument. Well, in the tradition that we normally have put in place, and where we talk about the Pullman National Monument, today we're going to deviate just a little bit because we need to do some updates. Recently, in the Chicago Tribune article that was written, that was picked up by newspapers across the country, this talks about pollution in the Pullman Park. And I'm in a snit about that because it does not make the distinction. The whole purpose of our spending time with you every Sunday to talk about what is the Pullman National Monument, the boundaries, and what's here, and that kind of thing was to clarify the misinformation that has been disseminated to the public, and apparently still is, that the Pullman National Monument is one building, and it is not, as we have repeatedly said on this wonderful vehicle that God has given to us that makes it possible for us to share the information without the hindrance of being, prohibited from presenting or giving to you, the general public, accurate information. There was, in fact, this article. Well, you know what? I'll read it to you. It says, a major cleanup of decades worth of hazardous materials at the Pullman National Monument will need to be done before the monument can officially open, according to a report by the Chicago Tribune. Now, that's a misrepresentation, and it's misleading, and it's also damaging to those of us who have been operating tourist sites in the Pullman National Monument, some of us for 30-plus years. We have been operating in the Pullman National Monument before it was labeled the Pullman National Monument, before the National Park Service joined us as a neighbor. For the point of accuracy, there is a building, the Pullman Administration Building, that is a part of the Pullman National Monument, is the building that they're discussing. That is one building. That is not the Pullman National Monument in its entirety. And so for that to be a blanket statement that is made, it says to the general public that the Pullman National Monument is not open because there's some hazardous waste that needs to be cleaned up in one building. That then says to the general public or the tourists that the sites in that operate in the monument are not open because one building has to need some attention. And that is what I'm in a snit about, because we have been operating as a tourist destination for the A. Philip Randolph Pullman Porter Museum for 22 years. the Historic Pullman Foundation, I think, for 40 plus years. There is a Pullman Cafe that is fairly new. I think they're 2 years old. There is the Greenstone Church that's been there for 30 years, well, operated as a tourist site for 30 plus years. It's been there since the 1880s. So the point I'm making is the boundaries for the Pullman National Monument are 103rd to 115th, from the Bishop Ford Freeway to the Metra train tracks. And that is a district boundary. The building in question is one building that is at 111th Street. So it is not true that the Pullman National Monument is not open. The National Park Service Visitor Center building that they're working on so that they can relocate and have a official visitor center for the Pullman National Monument is what is in under discussion. And it is at 111th Street. So that's very important. And it's unfair to all of the sites that are there to make that blanket statement, because we operate on tourist revenue, which is what we have been doing for decades. And so to put that information out there to say that the Pullman Monument, National Monument, is not open because the Environmental Protection Agency has not cleared that particular site is not only untrue, it is unfair. And so I wanted to spend the time to share that with you, the general audience and our listening audience, because we want you to know that we are all open for business. And it's just that the National Park Service has an issue with the building that they want to make their home in, which is the Pullman Clock Tower building. So I hope that that clears that up for you. We are all still there. The National A. Philip Randolph Pullman Porter Museum. And we will take a quick break and come back with our contributing co-host, Mr. David A. Peterson, Jr.
Visit the PullmanPorterMuseum.com, where you can purchase an annual membership at the level of your choice. And, of course, visit our website here to find out more about the show live from the Pullman National Monument at bbsradio.com/live from PNM to contact us.
And we are back, and we are very pleased to have with us today our contributing co-host, Mr. David A. Peterson, Jr., who is our tourism stats guru, that we want to bring him on today. We thank him for joining us frequently. And so we've given him the official label of our contributing co-host because he calls in frequently in any number of capacities. And so we thought it would be appropriate to address that, because he's not just someone who just calls in periodically. So, Mr. Peterson is going to talk to us today because we have just newly released tourism statistics for the state of Illinois, which are important to us because, after all, that is what this show is about, tourism-related information. So, Mr. Peterson, welcome to the show.
So, as you stated, you know, we're here to talk about the updated numbers for tourism. You know, when we came on previously, we talked about the numbers for the city with an anticipated $55 million stated by the mayor. He wanted to have $55 million coming by 2020. So as we ended the last year, he recorded that there's $54 million. So we're right where we want to be for, you know, the projections for the city. However, there have been the recent release numbers for the state. So once again, as we closed 2016, we were at $54 million just for the city of Chicago. However, Illinois welcomed 110 million visitors from around the country in 2016 at the end of last year. So the tourism revenue basically grew about 3% across the state. And this is basically another example of the area that we can improve the economy. You know, it's showing you that tourism is a proven inclining trend that's going on. Now, the administration is, as the state administration is moving forward, that's one of the things that they were trying to highlight as far as, you know, them being responsible for. So, you know, Governor Rauner actually gave this address last week, or a couple of weeks ago, and let everybody know what's going on as far as the state is concerned. So they're very proud of that, you know, as far as the domestic and international tourism going on. For the first quarter, there's been a 7% increase in tourism revenue in Chicago and about a 4% revenue increase downstate. So once again, this is showing you the consistent incline trend that's going on for tourism. Since the previous administration actually took office, ironically, tourism has grown 3% every year. So there's something going on here in the state, you know, that's attracting people here. And whatever that is, you know what I mean, it's under that umbrella of tourism, and we want to continue to encourage that. Because, you know, visitors in Illinois last year, they invested about $35 billion in the state's economy. You know, and in the last 2 years, Illinois has created 20,000 jobs, tourism-related jobs. So, you know, once again, we see how important tourism is to our city and our state.
You know, I just want to make a comment on what you just mentioned. I think, you know, since we began this show, which is a blessing for us and for the tourism industry, I think people in general are really not tuned in or aware of the impact of tourism, not just on Illinois' economy, but the American economy, the U.S. economy. And people just really, really don't get how much of an impact or contribution that tourism makes to this country in terms of jobs in particular. I think that people discount the kinds of jobs, the kinds of jobs that the hospitality industry contributes to the employment stats in this country. And I think that hopefully that the work that we're doing through this show and through the help of the BBS Radio Network, that we are able to inform and educate people about tourism, and not that it's just some place to visit, but it is a business. And so it is my hope against hope that we, as we continue this show and continue to educate people with information and data from people like you who are knowledgeable about all of those segments and components of tourism, that we can enlighten and inform people about the importance of it and the opportunities that are there and available under the broader umbrella of tourism.
No, well, I mean, you know, that's basically it as far as the updated numbers, you know, but like you said, I think it's important that we continue to highlight that this is an inclining trend going on. And as much as we talk about it, unless one's innovative enough to see a place for themselves within this, you know, it's not going to happen. And that's why, you know, this coming week we're going to be hosting an on-the-table discussion, on-the-table of the initiative sponsored by the Chicago Community Trust. So we'll be doing that in collaboration with the City Treasurer's Office, City of Chicago, that is, their Treasurer's Office, as we basically create a quote-unquote on-the-table discussion about the impacts of tourism, as well as cultural economic development as a whole. We really want to continue to beat the drum for that and talk about that openly so that, you know, people know that this is something that they can potentially take part in.
Well, I think that, you know, for those of us who are knowledgeable about this particular area, that we have an obligation to do that because, as I said, it's almost like it's a well-kept secret that people just are not informed or don't seem to grasp. And so I'm just hoping that with people like you and all of those people who are guests on this show from time to time from all across the country, as they continue to come on and visit and share information and data on this fabulous vehicle that we have in collaborating with BBS Radio Network, that it enables us to inform, enlighten, and educate people. Well, Mr. Peterson, do you have any other information you want to share with us?
No, just once again, we want to highlight that, you know, we will be talking about this on, you know, basically online on our On the Table discussion, covering, you know, all things tourism and cultural economic development. And, you know, there'll be a lot of new things that we highlight on there, and hopefully, you know, the community discussion around this will continue to wake people up, you know, as far as the opportunity that's here. We want to arm them with the resources and the opportunity they'll need in order to feel as a, you feel like they're a contributor to this new booming economy going on. You know, I mean, you know, there's a lot of new projections for tourism coming specifically for the National Park Service and the entire heritage area that we are a part of. So as we move, as we begin to start, you know, this next quarter in July, there are a lot of wonderful things that will be going on. So we'll continue to keep people updated on here. And, of course, you can always go to the Pullman Porter Museum. They always do a pretty good job of keeping things updated on that website. And I just continue to look out for what we have going on.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today. And we value your contributions and your expertise. And once again, we thank you. Everybody, join me in thanking Mr. David A. Peterson, Jr., President and Executive Director of the National A. Philip Randolph Pullman Porter Museum. We're going to take a quick break and come back with our next guest. Today's show is partially underwritten by Choose Chicago, the premier tourism marketing agency in Chicago, Illinois. And welcome to another edition of Around the Museum Table. Thank you so much for joining us today. Listening audience, our guest today, we always try to have things that are very interesting and informative for not just the people in the immediate area, but our global tourists as well. Because as people travel around the world, we like to think that we are able to direct individuals, tourists, and folks who are local to the sites where there are very interesting things happening. And this today's show, we're talking as our special guest. We have Ms. Harper, Karen Royal, who is our guest today, and she is the executive director of U272. And they are collaborating with River Road African American Museum in Donaldsonville, Louisiana. And so I'm not going to go on, belabor that. I'm just going to bring Ms. Royal on and let her tell you all about the very interesting project that she, her organization, is collaborating on with River Road African American Museum. Ms. Royal, welcome to the show.
Hi, and thank you for having me. As you mentioned, we are collaborating with Kathy Hambrick over at the River Road African American Museum. Our organization, the GU272 Descendants Association, is an organization made up of descendants of the 272 men, women, and children who were sold by the Jesuits of Georgetown University back in 1838. Back then, our ancestors were sold to two men in Louisiana, one by the name of Jesse Beatty and one by the name of Henry Johnson. Henry Johnson is a former governor of Louisiana, and he lived in Donaldsonville. In fact, Donaldsonville, Louisiana, was once our state capital. Well, Henry Johnson was one of the purchasers of our ancestors. And what we have been doing as the GU272 Descendants Association is having gatherings in the various locations where our ancestors were brought to back in 1838. They were brought to three parishes: Iberville Parish in a little town called Maringouin, Ascension Parish, which is where Donaldsonville is, and then also Terrebonne Parish, where Houma, Louisiana is. And the Georgetown Memory Project has been able to find descendants of over 200 of those 272 ancestors. And we have been working as the GU 272 Descendants Association to reconnect our families. And these genealogy gatherings are just one of the ways that we have been connecting descendants to each other as we re-knit our families back together.
Well, it's a fascinating project, which is why we were so interested. And I want to say that museums are very, we've gone beyond just being a structured museum, and we've taken on the responsibility almost like a community responsibility in the areas across the United States, where we're asked, not literally perhaps, but we're asked to do more with less, and we're asked to step outside the boundaries of the traditional function of a museum. And these are exactly the kinds of projects that exemplify that function or request or mandate that has been placed upon museums across the country and African American museums in particular, because as the funding shrinks and the PR dollars shrink, we have to draw within and take more responsibility and take on initiatives and examine our creativity or stretch our creativity boundaries so that we can do the job that we need to be doing for our communities and for ourselves and impact the broader community. And so this is exactly the kind of project that piques the interest and the curiosity of people, again, as I say, not just in the immediate area, but for tourists who are traveling around the world and traveling to places like in New Orleans that you're very close to, that we try to encourage those people to visit you and come to you and see and explore and listen and learn to the kinds of things that you're doing. I guess one of the things that I wanted to know was if you could share with our listening audience the genesis of this project. How did it start? What prompted you to do it? And then how did you come to embarking upon the collaboration with River Road African American Museum?
Sure. About this time last year, I noticed an article from the New York Times newspaper that spoke about some members of a Hawkins family out of Meringuen, Louisiana, and they talked about them being connected to a sale of 272 enslaved people. And because I had already been doing genealogy, I knew my husband's family was from that little town, Meringuen, and his grandmother was a Hawkins. I knew immediately that that was his family. And so in the New York Times article, they mentioned the name of a Louisiana genealogist, Judy Riffle. And so I reached out to Judy Riffle, and I told her what I had in my family tree about the Hawkins relatives. And she was able to connect me to two additional generations going back in history. Judy Riffle is hired by the Georgetown Memory Project. The Georgetown Memory Project was started by a man by the name of Richard Cellini. Richard is a Georgetown alumnus who found out about the sale of our ancestors and wanted to know more about the descendants. And no one could tell him anything about the descendants. In fact, they said that there were no descendants, that all of those enslaved people had died in the malodorous swamps of Louisiana. And so Richard knew there had to be more. And so Richard hired Judy Riffle, and I've been in contact with her. But when I saw that newspaper article and then subsequent CBS News story, in the CBS News story, I saw a woman that I knew, Sherilyn Branch. Sherilyn Branch was a teacher of mine when I was in middle school, and she was the school principal in New Orleans, and I just happened to have her phone number. I contacted Sherilyn, and I said, we really need to get together as descendants and just begin to organize ourselves, because this is major. And throughout the summer of 2016, the descendants came together, and we formed an organizing group so that we would be able to respond when Georgetown made an announcement about what they were going to do. As it turned out, and I didn't know this at the time that I read the article, but there were some students in the fall of 2015 who had protested in the president's office when they found out that two buildings on their campus was named for the two priests who sold our ancestors. They demanded that those names be changed. And the president of Georgetown University formed a working group to address the name change as well as other issues around that 1838 sale. The president of Georgetown came down to Louisiana in June of 2016 and met with several of the descendant families, my family being one of them. And he told us that at the end of August, they would make an announcement about what the working group recommendations would be. And we knew that we needed to have some type of a unified response to that announcement. And in August of 2016, the descendants began to meet as a small organizing group. We decided that we needed to create a descendants association, but we also wanted to create a foundation that would raise $1 billion to take care of the needs and educational aspirations, as well as work on things such as racial healing and healing from the legacy of slavery. And so we've been doing that work since last August. And then as of January of 2017, we officially created the GU 272 Descendants Association. Now, we had one of these genealogy gatherings in New Orleans back in January, but I knew that we needed to reach out to people in the history world around this story. And when I knew about the Ascension Parish families, I automatically knew I needed to contact Kathy Hambrick of the River Road African American Museum. I have always known about the museum. I visited it many, many years ago when it was on another location where there was a fire. And I knew that if I wanted more information about anything going on in Ascension Parish, I needed to be in touch with the River Road African American Museum. And so we reached out to Kathy Hambrick and asked her if she would partner with us on this upcoming event on June 24th, which is what we call a GU 272 Descendants Association Genealogy Gathering. And not only did Kathy gladly step up to partner with us, she made arrangements for our event to be held at the local parish courthouse. And her museum will be open on Saturday and Sunday. So anyone coming in from out of town, it will also be open on that Friday, on June 23rd, so that anyone coming in from out of town will have the opportunity to visit the museum. There's lots of amazing information in that museum that's not just about Donaldsonville, but other interesting tidbits of information about our entire state. And it's definitely a destination. So we definitely encourage people who are coming for our genealogy gathering to take time out to visit the museum.
Well, that's great information to pass on to folks who are listening. One of the things I would like to know is, and you may have covered this in the statement that you just made, but can you tell us what it is that you ultimately would like to accomplish from this first gathering? And is this first gathering connected to a series of events that will ultimately contribute to accomplishing the goal of GU272?
Yes, this is actually our second gathering. We intend to have these gatherings in each of the parishes where the descendants, I'm sorry, where the original ancestors were brought and enslaved. We started out in New Orleans. This one is in Ascension Parish. We have another one that we'll do in Iberville Parish, and then again in Terrebonne Parish. And then we'll also do Baton Rouge, Louisiana. That way we're covering the two large towns in Louisiana, New Orleans, and Baton Rouge. And what we, the main goal of these gatherings is to help prospective descendants figure out if they are indeed descendants. So at these gatherings, we provide information on genealogy. We have a presentation on the history of this sale, this 1838 sale. In fact, at our June 24th event, we're going to have Judy Riffle, the genealogist who has been working with the Georgetown Memory Project. And Judy's going to do a presentation, and she'll be able to answer questions about the families who were enslaved in Ascension Parish, as well as all of the families that were a part of this sale. We do know who some of the families were that were in Ascension Parish, because the most amazing thing about this sale of enslaved people is that these ancestors had last names. And so we have a list of those last names. And so if someone knows that their family comes from Ascension Parish and their last name is any one of these 14 names that we know were in Ascension Parish, they may want to come to this event so that they can connect with other descendants, also connect with Judy Riffle and members of our Descendants Association, so that they can begin to connect those dots to see if they too are indeed a descendant of what we call the GU272.
Wow, that is so, that's a rather emotional endeavor. I think outside looking in, the general public and maybe just the average person, particularly those who may not be of African descent, they don't really understand what this kind of an activity or with this kind of issue that has emerged, what it really means to people of African descent. It is a tremendous undertaking, number one. It has a tremendous, it has and would have a tremendous impact upon those descendants and their families, which is something that not just anyone will pick up that mantle and take it forward, because it's a lot of work. I know that. A few years ago, maybe 10 years ago, I embarked upon a similar project. I created something called the National Registry of African American Railroad Employees. And of course, that name denotes the connection to the Pullman Porters, who were the most predominant. But I started a project where I convinced American Family Insurance to sponsor a national advertising campaign, because I kind of just wanted to know who some of those people were, what they ended up being, the families of these people. What was interesting was that I thought we might get a few hundred, 1,000 maybe. We did a national advertising campaign in every major African-American magazine in the country. We ended up with 7,000 responses. It was just amazing. And the reason I'm coming to this point was, it was not a paid research project. It wasn't one of those research projects that was paid by a university, say, for the sake of this discussion. It was a me project. And so I was not expecting that kind of response, nor was I prepared to handle that kind of response. And so what ended up happening was that I ended up reading all 7,000 responses.
Wow.
It took a few years. But one of the entries was, there was an entry in the comments where we asked the respondents to share a story about their descendant who might have been a Pullman porter, a dining car waiter, or a fireman, whatever that capacity was. And one of the responses was something that has just stayed with me to this very day. It was a response that said that this was a little girl who was sharing her recollection of an experience of her traveling on a ship to America. She was 9, and it hit me that she was on a slave ship.
Oh, my.
I just began to weep uncontrollably. It was just, I didn't expect that kind of reaction. I didn't expect to encounter that kind of firsthand conversation. But the point I'm making is this woman was from New Orleans.
Oh, wow.
She was from New Orleans, and so her family had established this tradition of sharing all histories. And so this story that she shared was of her great-grandmother, whose son was a Pullman porter, and that's how the story emerged. And so I know what this kind of thing can mean. I know how it impacted and affected me, and I was unrelated. And so I know that this GU272 is not just going to end here. And I'm be thrilled to follow you with this project to see where it ends, how it ends, and what develops as it continues to emerge and evolve. So I ask that you please keep me personally apprised. And I didn't mean to go off on a tangent, but I thought the connection was there. I wanted you to see the significance of how this kind of thing can impact not just the family, but somebody
Absolutely.
Like me who was a stranger. And so wanted to share that with you because you don't know where this is going.
You definitely don't know. We don't know where this is going. And that's why we are encouraging people to bring their school-age children to this event, because a child is never too young to begin to hear the stories of their family. And this is amazing American history in the making. And we want to make sure that our young people are a part of this as they work together with their family members to learn more about their own family and how they may be connected to these 272 individuals who were sold in 1838. It is very emotional. And when you said, you know, it turned out to be a kind of a me project, that's kind of the way this has turned out as well. Of course, all of us want to know more about our family. But once you realize that you're connected to thousands of other people, and we now know through the DNA that these three locations in Louisiana have family members who were connected to each other, you just want to know more. And I know that for my family, and I know for many of the other families, this will never come to an end, because we will always be searching for how we connect to our other cousins that the DNA is showing us we are related to.
Well, I would love to have you folks come again as this project emerges. And it's almost like a flower that's blossoming. It's just opening up. You don't know what's going to happen. But I personally would like to be informed as you progress, so that we can share with the listening audience what you're doing and how things have emerged. And when you have additional events like this, as you're connecting and partnering with other institutions, please.
And I would also like to encourage people to visit our website, gu272.net. They can register for this June 24th event at the website. And we're often updating our website with new information and new revelations about the families that we're finding.
Well, Karen, I can't thank you enough for sharing this important information with us. Karen Harper Royal, everybody, Executive Director of GU272, Descendants Association. And she's been our guest discussing the partnership with River Road African American Museum in Donelson, Louisiana. And by the way, Karen, how far is Donelson, Louisiana from New Orleans?
It's about an hour's drive.
Okay, all right. Well, listening audience, whoever you are, wherever you are, we hope that this information has been informative for you and interesting enough that when you're in this part of the world, you can visit Donelsonville, Louisiana, and explore this fascinating history. We encourage you to do that. Once again, Karen, thank you so, so very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. So, everybody, we are going to take a quick break and come back. With wrapping up, we want to share with you some information on Choose Chicago. Check out their website. Just a quick break. Choose Chicago is the premier marketing agency, tourism marketing agency in Chicago, Illinois. And there's all manner of things happening in Chicago. There's the Blues Fest, the Gospel Fest, Dave Matthews, all of that's happening in June here in Chicago. And to learn more about those things, you can visit ChooseChicago.com. Again, that's ChooseChicago.com. We thank you. And let's take a quick break and come back to wrap up. Today's show is brought to you by the Pullman Messenger Magazine and Hughes Peterson Publishing, partially underwritten by United Auto Workers, Local 551, and the Chicago Neighborhood Initiative. So we are just wrapping up, and we want to take a couple of minutes to thank a few people. We thank you, the listening audience, because without you, there would be no show. We thanks to our fantastic engineer, Mr. Don Newsom, and BBS Radio Network. Thanks to our corporate sponsors, United Auto Workers, Local 551, and Choose Chicago, the premier marketing agency for tourism in Chicago, Illinois. The Pullman Messenger Magazine, and the National A. Philip Randolph Pullman Porter Museum. Those are our partners. Those are the people who we depend on and who help us continue the work that we're doing. And, of course, Hughes Peterson Publishing. Visit us on the World Wide Web at www.pullmanportermuseum.com. And we thank you so very much for listening to us today. We thank you for joining us. We thank you for giving up a part of your Sunday with us. And last but not least, we are special thanks to Jonathan Fritzen, the Swedish smooth jazz artist who allows us to use his music every single Sunday. We thank him. We thank you. And we'll see you next time on Live from the Pullman National Monument.
Live from Pullman National Monument was brought to you by Hughes Peterson Publishing in Chicago, Illinois. Hosted by Dr. Lynn Hughes.